and welcome to the Mountain Money Show on this fine fall Monday. I hope anyone listening enjoyed this glorious fall weather this past weekend. I am Jill Schroyer, and I am here with Renee Bodley-Miller.
Good morning, Jill. It was a great weekend, wasn't it?
Amazing weather.
We were down there for the shot ski. We were part of the 1,300 people who set that world record. It's always a fun time in Old Town Park City when you can be a world record holder at the same time. And what I loved about it, it was so inclusive. Some people think, ooh, I'm not a drinker, but they had shots of apple cider. So thank you, Sunrise Rotary, for doing that. That's awesome. And hey, Breckenridge, now the ball's in your court. So challenge is on. It's also Columbus Day here, Jill. You know, as Emily Means just told us in the local news hour, a lot of communities now refer to it as Indigenous Peoples Day, which is interesting. It's a federal holiday. But the stock market is open. So for all of our business listeners out there, you can still be watching your stocks today because Wall Street's cranking away. It's also a state holiday. That means that the DMV is closed. It means the liquor store is closed. The schools are open. That's probably because they have a fall break coming up at the end of this week. So kids are in school today. You might want to check with banks, you know, county offices. I think Summit County is open today. But again, don't go to the DMV. Don't go to the liquor store. We know they are closed.
Great. We are excited to dive in with our guests for the show today. Real excited about our first guest today, Todd Davis, co-author of Everyone Deserves a Great Manager. I know I'm especially excited for this discussion, being an HR professional. So many people, I'm sure some of our listeners out there, have experienced bad managers in their past, or hopefully not currently, which have may even limited their career growth. Sure, some of you are just cringing thinking of someone in your past specifically. On the contrary, to have a great manager is someone who can be instrumental in one's career success, and I consider even more importantly to their personal growth. So welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to going through those six critical practices for leading a team today. We really hope we can get through all six during our 30-minute time together. So without further ado, let's dive in. I'd love to hear you speak a little bit first about developing a leader's mindset.
Absolutely. So the first of the six critical practices for leading a team is to develop a leader's mindset. And what I'm sure your listeners have experienced, what we've certainly experienced, is that you've got some great individual contributor in the organization, and so what do? We promote them. and that may be a good thing, but they have no experience or training in leading others. In fact, a Harvard Business Review cited that, on average, most people are put into their first leadership role at age 30 and receive no formal training until age 42. So there's this 12-year gap of, you know, welcome to good luck leadership is kind of the mantra there. And so while a few of your same skills and things that you know, helps you be successful as an individual contributor don't necessarily transfer over. So the first thing we need to do is shift our mindset to that of realizing that we get results with and through others. It's not about us anymore. It's about the team that we lead.
That's so hard to develop that leader mindset when you're now leading the people that you were probably coworkers with just the week before. And a leader's mindset, often for someone who hasn't been trained as a manager, Todd, no one has told them this is how you can be authoritative yet inclusive. How do you teach somebody that?
Yeah, it's a great point. Well, first, they buy this book and they read the six critical practices. but then I think transparency has always worked well for me, and I've coached leaders for nearly 30 years of my career. And so, having in the situation you bring up, where maybe it's one of the team members where you were right alongside me, and now you're my boss, and maybe you even hired on after I did. And so, I think just being very transparent and declaring your intent. Look, I know that I'm now in this leadership role, and we have leadership roles so that we have some structure and we can get decisions made and things like that. But please know that I want to continue learning right alongside with you. And while I'll be probably the one that needs to make some final decisions, it will never be without everybody's input and trying to get the best thinking forward. I mean, that's an example of a transparent and sincere discussion. So again, real easy to talk about this, much harder to do, but that's the mindset that I would have as I move into this leadership role. How do I help the team I'm now leading become successful versus how do I make myself look like a great leader?
Well, moving on to point number two, holding regular one-on-ones. This is one of my favorite topics of discussion when I talk with new managers and just share some tools on how they can be successful. Todd, so I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on these regular one-on-ones.
Thank you. Yeah, most people will hear, you know, hold regular one-on-ones and think, well, wow, that's really mind-blowing information. Don't we already know about that? We do, except for most managers overlook this wonderful opportunity to really create the circumstances for raising the engagement level of their team. Whether it's once a week or every other week or even once a month if you've got larger teams, this frequent connection with your team is this golden opportunity to really check in with them, not just a status check, how are things going on the project, what's going to happen next, and this and that. That may be a small portion of an effective one-on-one, but the one-on-one is really about the team member. They should drive the conversation. It's a time to say, hey, Joe, what's working for you? What's not working for you? What would you like to do next? Or what additional things are you hoping to add to your skill set? It's a chance to make it all about the team. And you have a manager who takes the time to do that on a frequent basis, and you really, that person, in a sense, buys your loyalty, and you really have got somebody looking out for you. So these one-on-ones are a golden opportunity not to be missed and to not cancel. Boy, that's the most common mistake we see is a manager who's really busy saying, gosh, can we postpone this? And you've just sent a signal to that team member that they're not a priority, that they're not as important as whatever it is you've got on your plate. And while certainly urgent things come up, make it a habit to never cancel your one-on-ones, to do your very best to hold them at a time that they won't be canceled.
Todd, I just want to restate that for the listeners. Some of them might be listening thinking, oh, okay, maybe I've done these on occasion. Two things. What would you recommend as what I call the perfect cadence for one-on-ones? You mentioned depending on the size of the team. If you can touch on that a little bit more.
You bet. So again, depending on, you want to be realistic. And what I've seen some well-intended managers do is say, well, I'm going to do this every week. And they got 20 people reporting to them. And they get 2 weeks into it and they say, okay, this was unrealistic. Well, they've just caused a big withdrawal with their team. So be realistic about the size. It's not, it is about the cadence. It's not, so if it's once a month, but I'm consistent and I take 45 minutes and boy, Todd never cancels his one-on-ones. And I've seen him put off meetings with the CEO and other things because I'm that valuable to him. That's the more important thing. So it's whatever I have to stick to it and to be consistent about it, to block out. I make a habit of blocking out 5 minutes before the one-on-one starts so I can clear my head, so I can put my iPhone away, I even take off my Apple Watch if that's going to be buzzing me during the one-on-one. I make sure this person knows you are my priority for the next 30 or 45 minutes. And I've maybe sent them out something ahead of time saying, hey, here's some things I'd like you to be thinking about. What would you like me as your leader to be thinking about? I want to make this about you. Let's get through all the questions or the things that you have for me to answer. Make it all about them. Show complete, sincere dedication to making this their meeting.
So number three is set up your team to get results. And I imagine this is probably challenging for new managers because they got to where they are as a manager because they were the ones that got the results. How do you teach someone how to delegate?
Yeah, so it is. It's a lot about delegation. It's mostly about making sure your team understands the why behind the what. So as a manager, as a leader, you spend a lot of your time in meetings with other leaders or other leadership of the company, and you're discussing the direction, the vision, the strategy, and that's all great. And you have this groundwork or this foundation to understand what you're doing. And then many managers go back to their teams and not intentionally, but they forget their teams aren't as on board because they didn't have all of that history there to get to the place where they're going. So taking the time first to help your team understand the why are we doing this as a company? Why are we headed this direction? And then the what. Here's what our team needs to do to contribute to that. Here's what we need this group of people to do. And then the how. And this is where most managers make their big mistake. The how is they say, okay, so here's what you're going to do, here's what you're going to do, and here's what you're going to do. And while that might be efficient for the short term, it's not very effective. When we get to the how is when we say, okay, now we've got a lot of smart people on our team, and I've taken, you know, I've tried to explain to you the why and the what, but let's determine together how we're going to do this. And while I'm the manager, you're a lot smarter than I am. So what would your best ideas be? When you involve people in the how versus just dictating and delegating to them, that's where you really have the opportunity for buy-in. we say no involvement, no commitment. And this is your golden opportunity to get people really involved so that they have a stake in the ground and they have and take some ownership of the project at hand.
Well, I'm excited to dive into number four, creating a culture of feedback. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about and help people better understand some things I just really find fascinating. I found some information teams are six times more productive and more high performing if they give more frequent reinforcing feedback. And I love how you talked about feedback, reinforcing good behavior in the form of feedback. And I think all too often people say, oh, good job, and they don't describe what a good job was for. And also feedback when something needs to improve. So I'd love to hear some more on that topic.
Yeah, you just hit on the critical points of this. You know, when you hear the word, when someone says, hey, Renee, do you have a few minutes? I'd love to give you some feedback. What do you initially think?
I might be a little unusual, Todd, because I thrive on feedback, positive or negative. I want to know how I can do it better. But I think where you're headed is most people probably instinctively cringe and think, uh-oh, bad news is coming my way.
Yeah, no, and I'm like you, and I love it too. And there's this little internal thing, even in those that of us that love it, that think, oh, okay, what have I been doing wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, we have this hesitancy, and then some more dramatic than others. You're right. But feedback, just as you pointed out, feedback is this opportunity for all of us to grow and develop. And as was cited in the book, we talk about not negative or positive feedback, and we're not trying to tiptoe around those words, but we call it reinforcing feedback or redirecting feedback. For people who have had any opportunity to raise a child or a niece or a nephew, you know, when they first tie their shoe on their own or they first make their bed or, you know, wear clothes to school or whatever, it's the opportunity to say, way to go, Joey, that was really good, and encourage that specific behavior, and then Joey or Jane, they do it more often. That's reinforcing feedback, and as was just said, it's one thing to say, gosh, you do a great job. Well, that's nice, but it's so much more meaningful and actually helpful when we say, hey, Susan, I want you to know how much I appreciate you being on our team. That report you provided yesterday, the level of detail you went to on that, that shaped the whole direction of the conversation, which otherwise would not have gone that way. I've just always admired your attention to detail. You tie it to a specific behavior, that reinforcing feedback, and of course, it's got to be sincere. That person will remember that feedback years from now, and they'll keep doing more and more of that good thing. So that's where, you know, reinforcing feedback is this golden opportunity. And the same with redirecting feedback. You know, I've got a good and talented person here, but they've got this blind spot, or they've got this thing that's really hindering their performance. Sit down with that person, lower their defenses by maybe sharing some feedback you received before as the manager, saying, hey, I want you to know my only intent here is to help you be the superstar I know you can be. I've been given feedback in my career, and while it maybe stung a little bit at first, it's really helped me, and so that's my only intent, is to help you. That's the way to start a redirecting feedback conversation. And then equally as important for a manager, it's when we create a culture of feedback, it's for me to go out and seek feedback. You know, just by my title alone as leader or manager, I make it a little bit or a lot unsafe for people to give me feedback. And so those managers that really want to be great, be the great leaders their teams deserve, they systematically go out and seek feedback. And that's not dropping by somebody's office and saying, hey, what did you think of the way I ran the meeting today? Because put on the spot like that, most people are going to tell us just what we want to hear. But if I reach out to that person and say, hey, would you take some notes in our next meeting on ways you think I could improve the way we run the meetings? I'm really interested in making my leadership in those meetings more effective, and then maybe I can get with you in a couple of days and you could share your notes with me. That's how an effective manager goes about seeking feedback for herself or himself.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever received as a manager came from a mentor who said, Renee, I want you for the next week to go back to your newsroom and only give people positive feedback. I don't care how egregious the behavior is where you want to say, oh, you're in trouble because you did XYZ. Instead, just hold that back and instead give nothing but positive feedback. And the energy in that newsroom by the end of that week was really remarkable.
And what great advice.
Yeah, it was hard though, Todd, you know, because if someone missed their deadline, it was hard not to say, you can't miss your deadline. But still, it was an exciting challenge, and it really did force me to look at things in a different way and exercise some different muscles And I encourage managers out there, just try it for one day.
You may find those days where all you can think of to say is, wow, thanks for brushing your teeth today. If they can't find anything else good to say, but that's great advice to just focus on for a period of time, but just the positive. That's a great piece of advice.
And Todd, to chime in here, one thing I heard you say, which was actually something I wanted to ask a little bit more about, this whole topic of feedback I could probably talk for days about, but one thing you mentioned about safety, and there's a lot of kind of buzz about creating a culture of safety, creating safety in, you can only have good feedback if you've created an environment of safety. And so if you could tell us a little bit more about perhaps, you know, just kind of More on this topic, your thoughts on teaching managers really how to do that. I think everyone knows you're supposed to, but some maybe a couple tips on how to do that.
You bet. Well, I love to ask managers that I'm coaching or working with the question, do you make it safe for your team to tell you the truth? And they'll say, well, just kind of like we've been saying, I love feedback. Great, I understand that. But do you make it safe for them to tell you the truth? And they'll say, well, I don't know. How do managers make it safe? And then I say, so glad you asked. So for the things that I've seen those great leaders do that make it safe for their team to tell them the truth is, number one, assume good intent. Be someone who is known for assuming good intent versus being critical or suspicious of others. That's the first thing they do. The second thing they do is, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, they ask for the feedback. They proactively ask for the feedback. And it's the way they ask for the feedback. It's, again, don't show up and put people on the spot. But let people know ahead of time. I'm really, like all of us, I'm focused on improving my skills in this or this area. And so I'm going to be periodically asking you for your feedback. And I want you to know I'm not fishing for compliments. I'm really sincere in wanting to improve in my managerial skills. So please know that that's my only intent. And then when you do ask for the feedback, you know, just follow the example that I gave. Would you be willing to take some notes during our next meeting, or would you be willing to think through these questions and then send me your responses in a couple of days after you've given time to think about it? So it's the way you ask for the feedback. When you're getting the feedback, something else to be sure and do: listen, take notes, don't interrupt. I've seen well-intended managers ask for feedback, a team member is giving them feedback, and then they say, oh, well, but let me tell you why I do that. Or no, you haven't got that quite right. Well, you've just made it very unsafe for that person to give you feedback in the future. So don't interrupt. Don't put, even if they've got some wrong information, just listen, absorb it. And then the last thing I see them do, the good managers, is act on the feedback. Now, by acting on it doesn't mean you have to incorporate all of it. Carefully evaluate the feedback. Think through, gosh, what's going to help contribute to the manager I'm really trying to become for my team? But acting on it does mean you follow up with that person. You say, hey, Jill, I really appreciate that feedback you gave me the other day. I want you to know I've been thinking deeply about it, and I want to know if you'd be okay if I come to you again in the future, because this was super helpful to get your perspective on things. Those are the critical things I see that great managers do to make it safe for others to tell them the truth.
In case you are just joining us, KPCW listeners, I'm Renee Miller. I'm here with Jill Schroyer in our Old Town studios here at KPCW, and we are enjoying a discussion with Todd Davis. He's the co-author of the new book, Everyone Deserves a Great Manager. So, Todd, you've walked us through the first four principles, critical practices for leading a team. Number five, lead your team through change. We've interviewed so many successful business owners here on Mountain Money, and one of the recurring refrains is change is constant for a successful business. So how do you work with those employees who say, I like doing things the way we do them?
Yeah, and I've been one of those employees from time to time, okay? We talk about in the book the model that shows four zones. There are four zones in any change. You know, the zone of what you just said, the status quo. Hey, things are fine. Why do we need to do that? There's the zone of disruption. There's the zone of adoption, which is still kind of, you know, challenging. And then there's finally, hopefully, we get to the zone of better performance. Great managers in leading their team through change, they don't just accept and say, okay, the change is wonderful and I'll just be happy and put on my rose-colored glasses. If they're not on board with the change, they work with their manager first to take time to understand the change, to really get on board, not just say they're on board, so that they can then successfully lead their team through change. They don't protect their team. They don't shield their team against the change and say, okay, well, I'll take all the bumps and challenges, and you guys really won't feel much of it. They take the time, like we said earlier, to explain the changes to their team, why we're doing this, why it's important, what's going to be bumpy, what some of the challenges are going to be. They help their team anticipate those challenges, but they lead out. They're the, as I said to a group the other day I was speaking with, they're the mom or dad of the team, and they help lead their team through that change. They get there first. Sometimes it's only a minute or two first, but they get there first so they can let their team know what to expect. You know, a common mistake I'll see managers make is look at this as a time to form a real camaraderie with their team in a bad way, meaning, yeah, I don't know why senior management made that decision. I'm with you. I think it's stupid, but we're going to have to go through it. Well, you unintentionally have just lost a lot of credibility with your team. So don't look at this as an opportunity to become an us versus them, but get on board and do what you need to do, understanding the change, to get on board with it so that you can successfully then help lead your team through that change.
Todd, in my work in HR, I like to help managers sometimes specifically with verbiage. And The reality, sometimes people, as I say, aren't willing to get on the bus and be a team player. And despite the efforts on getting real clear on the why, helping them understand, spending extra, you know, there's always the one person who's got the extra questions. They need a little more coaxing. And the reality, Todd, end of the day, the manager goes home and thinks this employee, we'll call him just Joe, he's not ready to move forward with us. Could you help us a little bit with just some, how do you start that conversation? What words specifically
great,
would you
great
use?
Great scenario that I think most people can relate to. We've always had that one, or maybe more than that one person. So in that kind of a situation, I'm assuming a lot here, but let's say I've been through numerous conversations with Joe and helping him really understand the why, and he's just not getting there. I would have a very sincere, respectful, but direct conversation with Joe and say, hey, Joe, we've been talking about the change that we're moving through and we're going through for the last 4 weeks, and it really feels like this has been a constant struggle for you, and you're still not there, and I respect that. I can think of nothing worse than getting up every day, coming to work in a job where I am disagreeing with everything in the direction where we're going, and I respect that too. Is there anything... The change has happened. It's happening. Is there anything that I could do as your leader to help that not be the feeling you get up with? Because if there's something that I'm missing, I apologize for that. Could you let me know? And if there isn't, I think we ought to talk about whether there's another area in the company where you'd like to contribute more, or whether you think that you can actually get on board here. And it would be a gentle but direct discussion that may lead into a performance plan and maybe, you know, transitioning Joe out of the company. But I would approach it from his perspective, saying, gosh, I can think of nothing worse than coming to work every day feeling, you know, really adamant that this is the wrong direction. It is the direction we're going based on all the discussions you and I have had. So is there anything I could do to help you get on board, or would you rather spend your time and energy looking at maybe some other ways you might contribute in another part of the organization or maybe even in another organization? I know that sounds ouch, but that's, I think, the conversation that you might eventually need to get to.
Todd, I really liked how you said the last part, because I was listening to your steps you'd go through, and the last part you said, am I missing anything? And that shows you're humble as a manager. You know, I don't know everything. I think I've done my job here in explaining, but honestly, am I missing everything? I liked that you outlined that for our listeners.
Thank you.
So moving on to number six, managing your time and energy. This is a great one. I love this topic as well. So can you lead us into this one?
Yes. I'll hear many managers or leaders that I'm coaching say, oh, manage your time. Yeah, I know I need to exercise and I need to eat right. Well, yes, that's true. It hasn't changed. Why aren't you doing it? But most importantly, it's the principle behind this. You know, you and I have seen these studies that are remarkable that say within 15 to 20 years, 40% of what is currently being done by human beings will be done and replaced by artificial intelligence. And I honestly kind of think, really, is that true? And then I see my neighbor's robotic lawnmower, you know, mowing their lawn or whatever. I think, oh, I guess that is becoming kind of true. And so practice number six, managing your time and energy, all about investing in yourself. It's staying relevant. And yes, that means, you know, not burning out and the right amount of exercise and whatever boosts your energy. But it's really about investing in your mind, and what the leader values gets valued. So if I want to continually be renewing and investing in myself, I'm my team doing that, I've got to be modeling it myself. So we go through the five energy drivers of, you know, sleep and relax and connecting and moving and eating. We talk about how I more effectively manage my time. But I just want to make sure people don't really forget that the overarching principle here is investing in myself. It's the reason when you and I get on an airplane, and they're walking through the safety guidelines, and they talk about putting the mask on yourself first, not because we're selfish, it's because by that investment in myself, then I'm much more capable in doing good and investing in those that I lead.
I had a good friend and who heads up a nonprofit here in Park City give me some advice last week, and she said, "Renee, self-care is not an option. It is. It should be your priority, as it is your priority to run your nonprofit. But self-care is not an option." And I admit, I've had to repeat that several times to myself over the past few days.
Yeah,
when
I think we all do.
Do I go? Do I work on this work thing, or do I go to the gym and just say self-care is not an option? And I'll be darned, it works every time. You just get
great
that energy
advice
back in spades, don't you? So we've
that's
got about
advice
4 minutes left here, Todd. What do you think, who is this book written for? I mean, it feels like it's for first-time managers, but it also feels like long-time managers can get a lot out of this as well.
You have all these great insights. Could you just do all these interviews with me for the rest of the day? Because that is very key and significant to what we found out. When we started the book, it was, in fact, written for first-time managers, this big gap that they had with, you know, putting in the position and no training. And yet, as you just cited, we have learned from managers, very senior managers we worked with around the world, including ourselves. So the three of us, the co-authors, have all been in management positions for a long time. And many of these practices, we're not perfect at any of them, but many of them are going, oh my gosh, I've got a huge gap there. What am I thinking? And so, you know, I hate to just say, oh, it's for everybody, but it really is for, I think, everyone in any kind of a leadership position, whether you're the CEO or whether you're a frontline leader, you will gain great benefit from at least one, if not all six, of the practices outlined in this book.
And I believe Scott Miller was up here at Dolly's on Saturday signing some books. Do you know what his turnout was like?
He said he had a great time. I don't know if that meant he had a great time with 3 people or with 300 people, but Scott's a go-getter, and we've all been doing these interviews and book signing, but I'm not sure. He just said it was a great experience, but I'm not sure the numbers was there.
Well, it was funny because we had the shot ski on Saturday afternoon on Main Street. And when I saw that he was doing the book signing on that afternoon, I thought, he's going to get a really big audience wandering
big
through Dolly's
turnout
bookstore.
Yeah, I'll bet he did. That's a good point.
So what is next for your team? If somebody reads this, can the Franklin Covey Group do presentations to companies?
So we do, yeah. So Scott and Victoria and I, the three authors, we do and are already doing keynotes on this. And if people go to franklincovey.com, and go under this topic, then there's all the different options that we have. We also have had for about 2 years a course by the same name, a workshop called The Six Critical Practices for Leading a Team. It's why we ended up writing the book. We didn't have plans to originally write a book, and this course for the last 2 years has been so widely subscribed to and taken that we thought, boy, a book by the same name would really help a lot of people. And so there is a work session already titled The Six Critical Practices for Leading a Team, which follows these exact same six practices. And again, you can go to franklincovey.com and learn more about that.
Thank you, Todd, for your time. And I think we've all learned something here and had some great conversations. Another thing I loved about what you said was this isn't just for first-time managers. It is really for everyone. And when I do management trainings and talk to people in management, I think these are reminders. Everybody can stand to be reminded. So thank you again to Todd Davis for being here, co-author of Everyone Deserves a Great Manager, here on KPCW's Mountain Money Show. We will be right back with a word from our underwriters.
Thank you so much.